Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle, and I'm being joined today by just a few members of the team that Undercurrent flew out to Barcelona, Spain for Seafood Expo Global. Diversified Communications, the US-based company that organizes the seafood-related conferences like Seafood Expo North America and Seafood Expo Global, they reported seeing a record crowd of more than 35,500 people at the event. Undercurrent sent 9 reporters to cover it and maintained a live blog for the duration of it, which ran April 21st to the 23rd. And you all who are on here with me today are still publishing news that you picked up from the show floor. So please join me in welcoming Barb Dean Simmons, Jacob Resnick, Cliff White, and Dan Gibson. Now, you've had now a week to digest the show. Barb, do you want to kick us off on what your thoughts were after walking Seafood Expo Global?
My best analogy for Seafood Expo Global, Amanda, is it's kind of like the United Nations of seafood. There's so much going on in that space, so many different countries represented. So it's a busy spot. Of course, I hung out mostly at the Canadian Pavilion, where I found that this is the show where they connect with Asian customers in particular. They say that this is where most of the major buyers from China, Asia, South Korea, Indo-Pacific, they tend to meet up here. And so they were kind of upbeat about meeting those customers. And I think some of them did some pretty good business and got some extra orders from those quarters.
Okay, so you were hearing some upbeat news from the show floor. Jacob, could you say the same?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say that I like Barb's analogy of this United Nations of seafood. And I spent a lot of time at the Alaska consulate, where really the talk around and the worry there is about these EU catch reporting rules, because the rules that go into effect this July will require basically every bit of seafood that's imported into the European Union to have not only, you know, where the plant it was processed, but also the individual vessel where the seafood was caught. And, you know, that is can be achieved in a number of fisheries, but not in Alaska's, you know, one of its largest, most valuable fisheries, which is wild salmon. There's about 1,800 boats in the Alaska salmon fleet, in like Bristol Bay, for example. And they're saying that the reporting requirements where the seafood is commingled in tenders, it would be impossible to meet these requirements. So there was a lot of literal diplomacy going on at the seafood show. And one of the head trade officials from NOAA, for the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, was there. And they've really been working feverishly behind the scenes with the European Commission, trying to get some clarity, perhaps even some flexibility in these rules before the salmon harvest begins in earnest. So that was one of the major conversations that's going on over in the Alaska side where I was.
Cliff, to me, it's almost like a Where's Waldo situation with you. Where's Cliff on the show floor?
Yeah, so if Seafood Expo Global is the United Nations, then I am Seafood's international man of mystery. You'll never know where I show up or when, but
I like that.
Sorry, I'll be around lurking and waiting for a CEO to have a free moment. But yeah, the big overarching theme of my conversations was U.S. tariffs, as they were last year. Even with the first round of U.S. tariffs shot down by the U.S. Supreme Court, the Trump administration is still gangbusters on getting more tariffs implemented. Right now, there's an international 10% tariff, but it's launched the Section 301 investigations, which should be wrapped up by July. And that targets 99% of all U.S. imports, not just seafood, but everything. And so pretty much every major seafood exporter sending stuff to the U.S. is worried about more tariffs. And from Ecuador to Indonesia to the Faroe Islands to Taiwan, everyone I spoke to is concerned.
That's what I immediately thought of heading into this event, especially after leaving Boston. When we left Boston, there was so much in the air. And now that I feel like it's kind of evened out. Barb, I want to circle back on the Canada side.
Canada is a bit of a different position on tariffs. Certainly, there's some underlying worry about where tariffs might go with the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement up for, I guess, debate July 1st. But everybody's kind of just sitting back to see what happens. There's no real sense of how that might go, except that we hope to see some negotiations soon and a way forward. So the tariff talk was sort of muted at the Canadian Pavilion. Canada was basically there just making sure that they could continue to do business with some of their trading partners in the EU and in Asia, where they have some solid trade agreements in place.
So I've had the luxury of being in both Barcelona and Boston, both which really enjoyed. But for me, as the Indian shrimp correspondent, what really, really struck me was the difference in turnout between the two. Because as anyone who visited the India Pavilion at the Boston stand could tell you, it was really, really sparse there. There were very, very few exporters who'd made the journey. And part of that, of course, was the flight disruption from the Middle East. But equally, you had, I think, there is a concern from the Indian side that they almost feel like message received now. Like, you've tried to give us a 50% tariff. You're giving us this Section 301 probe. Ecuador is muscling in on our market. The most they can do is basically hold their ground in the US. And as I was speaking with the head of the Seafood Exporters Association in Barcelona, he was telling me basically everyone is now looking, where can we diversify to? How do we reduce our risk and our dependence on the US market? And the result of that was a really packed stand of Indian shrimp exporters in Barcelona, far more than I've known in my time covering it. And you had all kinds of new faces. You also had a real prevalence of black tiger shrimp. I think they're expecting a really big harvest from that this year. But with one company, it should be clear here, it's not just Europe they're looking at, it's China as well. They have really taken off sales to China this year. One company has actually opened a sales office there. So in their case, it's Black Tiger, but it is also Vaname, I understand, that's looking to China. So yeah, a much bigger Indian shrimp presence at the show.
Jacob, you had an interesting situation in that you flew from Alaska, where you were reporting from Comfish, and then just went right to Seafood Expo Global. And it seemed like the conversations kind of followed you there.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I won't go into the tedious detail, the tedious journey that involved. But there has been a lot of conversations about consolidation in the processing side of things in Alaska, especially with respect to salmon, and that is still playing out in real time. Of course, the big news is that Northline Seafoods, which was a medium-sized salmon processor that has it for the last 2 years, has been bringing up a freezer barge up to Bristol Bay to process whole round salmon for what it calls real kind of high-end product lines. That has basically seen the departure of its co-founder and CEO and some of its senior management team over a very contentious deal to bring in a custom processing agreement with its arch competitor, Silver Bay Seafoods, which really has the lion's share of the processing market in Bristol Bay, and actually, I should say, writ large across Alaska. That process is shaking out right now, whether the deal will actually go through. We haven't seen confirmation that anything has actually been signed. Northline is currently controlled. We learned this through the course of our reporting. It's currently controlled by a CDQ group called the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. And we haven't actually seen confirmation that that deal has been finalized. So there's a lot of uncertainty of what the processing sector is going to look like in Bristol Bay. And, this is the time when the fleet really starts getting ready in earnest. I mean, fishing won't start for another couple of months, but this is when, the tenders and all the orders and preparations are being made. So there's a lot that we're watching at Undercurrent, and we'll be, bringing the latest out there. But I think it's definitely going to be a very interesting Bristol Bay salmon season.
So, Cliff, what Jacob was talking about, you've definitely been reporting a lot on the M&A side.
So yeah, there's always a buzz of deals around these big shows. There was no big bombshell announcement of a big acquisition this year, but Tom Seaman got a big interview with Glenn Cook explaining Cook's takeover of Avramar, which was contentious and seems to have finally resolved. But the macro story I got is just consolidation is coming for the industry. In the decade I've been covering seafood, it's always been the watchword of, a very non-consolidated industry. When was it going to roll up? And with Cook, with Movi, and now Captain Fresh as the big movers, it seems like we're finally getting what Ignacio Climen, the head of Antarctica Advisors, called strategic consolidators.
So you were covering a lot of consolidation. What were some of the other big trends that you noticed while reporting from SEG?
Sure. So the three big things that are in many conversations I had with executives at SEG was the general macroeconomic headwind caused by tariffs and the Iran war with higher fuel prices. So that was on everyone's lips. And then you have regulatory difficulties like the EU catch regulations, MMPA in the US, the Marine Mammal Protection Act enforcement, these kind of really big level regulatory actions that have really shaped the market over the past year and continue to shape them. And then the last one is the shortage of wild capture stocks or catches, rather, and that centered around shortages in whitefish. I spoke with several executives who are trying to figure out the way forward with prices for Alaska pollock, for cod, for haddock, all going through the roof, like unprecedented high prices. And everyone's trying to figure out what to do about that.
I was speaking with the Norwegians and their constant efforts to try and find something to keep their factories running with, because as anyone who sees our site every Wednesday morning will know, the price of cod and haddock in Europe right now has just gone astronomical. H&G cod and haddock, they are running seriously, seriously short this year. Got one guy I speak to every year, and I think 2 years ago he was calling it a perfect storm, all of the situations. Last year he said, I think he quoted Winston Churchill and said, "When you're going through hell, keep going." And I told him, "This year you need a new quote." And he's like, "There is nothing, right? We genuinely, this is a crisis now." And so what you do see though is companies at the event who had something to offer that wasn't cod and haddock, a whitefish alternative, they're doing really, really well. So there's quadruple the sales of hake going on in UK retail right now. Pangasius is doing very well. Regal Springs were there with their king tilapia again, and even farmed cod as well. Farmed cod is now finding its way into these factories who, even a couple of years ago, they wouldn't have even looked at it twice. So really
Wow.
fascinating to see all of these alternatives hitting the market in Europe. It's like everybody knows we love whitefish here, but there's just not enough to go around at the moment. So like that was one of the big, I'd say, discoveries of the event for me, was just checking out all of these alternatives, wild and wacky, some of them.
This podcast episode only just scratched the surface. If you want to learn more, check out undercurrentnews.com to read full coverage from Seafood Expo Global. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here next week.